I'm Martha McCallum, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Friday, March 30th, 2018. I'm Chris Foster. President Trump versus Amazon. President tweeting,
"Unlike others, they pay little or no taxes to state and local governments. They use our postal system as their delivery boy."
I'm Lisa Brady. Roseanne's hot new sitcom and her character's support for President Trump turning heads in often liberal Hollywood.
I don't think we should overinterpret it, but it does balance the scales just a little bit.
And I'm Shannon Bream. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
Amazon's been a frequent target of President Trump in speeches and in tweets, like one reading, "I've stated my concerns with Amazon long before the election. Unlike others, they pay little or no taxes to state and local governments, use our postal system as their delivery boy, causing tremendous loss to the U.S., and are putting many thousands of retailers out of business." President Trump has also made clear he links Amazon to the Washington Post. It's a newspaper that hasn't covered him particularly favorably, and they're both owned by Jeff Bezos, the paper and Amazon. Amazon's stock has been down on reports the president wants to go after the company and how it pays taxes, although the White House denies there's a push for any policies or actions like that.
The president has heard from many small businesses around the country that their brick and mortar stores are indeed hurt by the presence of Amazon and the competitive advantage that they have in terms of their tax situation.
John Decker is the White House correspondent for Fox News Radio.
Amazon does see some competitive advantage in terms of using the U.S. Postal Service rather than UPS or FedEx to deliver its goods. It's cheaper for them, so they're just simply taking advantage of the cheapest market out there in terms of delivering their products. As it relates to the other items that the president is complaining about, let's not forget that Amazon last year raked in $5.6 billion in profits. It essentially paid zero in federal income taxes because of some offsets that they had. Mm-hmm. And as a result, the president is right on that regard. So far, Amazon has not commented on this, but it does support federal legislation that would allow states to charge taxes on out-of-state retailers.
Well, I mean, he's right about the offsets, but we could have that debate, not me and you, but that debate could be had about any other corporation and the president himself. He hasn't paid income taxes in years for pretty much this exact same reason, right?
That's a good point. Is he the right vessel to be making this argument against Amazon? Amazon does collect on behalf of marketplace sellers in a few states. That's mandated by state law in Washington State, in Rhode Island, in Minnesota, and Pennsylvania. But it indeed has gained a competitive advantage by not collecting sales taxes in states where it lacks a physical presence.
Okay, so they collect sales tax for the products that Amazon itself is selling, but not on behalf of all third-party sellers that use Amazon as a portal to sell their stuff, right?
That's exactly right, with the exception of those states that I just mentioned.
Got it. This isn't just about Amazon. You can say, well, we want to save brick and mortar, we want to save mom-and-pop stores. Amazon's owned by the same guy who owns the Washington Post, who's a frequent critic of the president. Do you think that this plays in anywhere?
I think it does play in this equation. I mean, Amazon certainly isn't the only company in America that has taken advantage of the tax code. There are other companies that do that as well. But the fact that Jeff Bezos owns the Washington Post, not a big fan of the president in terms of its editorial page, very hard-hitting in terms of the news side of the newspaper, you have to imagine this has played a part in terms of the reason that the president has focused his ire on Amazon, owned by Jeff Bezos.
President Trump and a lot of small business owners aren't the only ones with a bone to pick right now with Amazon. Seton Motley is the president of Less Government. That's a nonprofit group based in D.C. dedicated to reducing the size and power of government. He took out a full-page ad in the New York Post criticizing a possible deal between Amazon and the Defense Department.
It's a Defense Department contract with Amazon. It's an exclusive contract, meaning they're the sole source provider, for 10 years on cloud backup for the entire Defense Department. I got problems with it on several levels. Let's begin with national security. Military, NASA, anytime lives are on the line, redundancy is very, very important. You got to have two and three and four backups of anything you're doing to make sure that the men and women are in harm's way, I say per the military, have always had the services they need at the ready. If you hire one company to provide all the cloud computing for the Defense Department and they go down, the Defense Department goes down. I just off the top of my head propose you hire five companies that do 40% of the work each. That's 5 times 40. That's 200%. That's every section of cloud computing you need done by two companies. That way, if one goes down, you have a backup. I don't have a problem with it being Amazon. I have a problem being anybody that was getting a sole source contract. My second problem is with the length. 10 years in tech is an eon in life, as far as constantly being updated, constantly being innovated, constantly being renewed.
Per se, you're saying it's not that you're against Amazon, but you take on Amazon in this ad. Are you just trying to be clever because you know President Trump isn't a super big fan of Amazon?
No. This particular component, I don't want any single company doing it. Now, I have an additional side problem with Amazon because he's going to take a ton of this money and use it against everything the Trump administration is trying to accomplish.
Well, that's the thing. You say that it's a bite the hand that feeds you kind of thing. If you give money to Amazon,
right.
If you give money to Jeff Bezos.
I stole that from Aaron Sorkin. I didn't think of that line. It's a great line. I didn't think of it. But yes, you're feeding the hand that bites you.
So it's not the money. This obviously needs to get done.
It's the money. It's the length of the contract. It's the sole, you know, it's the monopoly provider problem. The ancillary problem is you're giving it to frickin' Jeff Bezos, who hates you. But that's secondary or maybe even tertiary. The main problem is I want a bunch of companies. See, part of the problem is a bunch of ex-Amazon employees are the ones that crafted the specifications that companies have to meet.
Got it.
To get hired by the Defense Department, and so the only company, miraculously, the
right.
ex-employees crafted the criterion, and the only company that qualifies is Amazon.
Any reaction to the ad from anybody in government, your supporters, Amazon?
This is very close to being done, you know, a done deal. I think they're keeping their head down and hoping the calendar is their ally.
Seton Motley, thanks for your time.
I appreciate it, sir. Thank you.
This is Shannon Bream with your Fox News commentary coming up.
Roseanne Barr is back.
Have you looked at the news? Because now things are worse.
Not on the real news.
Oh, holy!
And the reboot of Roseanne, the sitcom on ABC, had a blockbuster debut. So big that her old friend, who's now the president, personally called to congratulate her.
It was just a friendly conversation about working and, you know, television and ratings.
Barr telling Good Morning America, President Trump understands how ratings can measure things, which might be why the success of the premiere is getting widespread attention.
It is an absolute phenomenon, and I kind of smelled this coming.
Howard Kurtz is the host of Media Buzz on the Fox News Channel.
I didn't know that 18 million people, are just really kind of a record-breaking number, were going to tune in for this 30-year-old show that came back on ABC. But I knew when I found out that Donald Trump figured in the storyline, and also the nostalgia craze and Roseanne herself, I just had a feeling that this was going to get a lot of attention, and boy, it sure did.
I mean, this really bucks the trend of what we've seen in the entertainment industry overall, you could say, since President Trump was elected.
And that is what's so fascinating about it. You know, most Hollywood people, all the late night comics, are pretty much liberal, anti-Trump types. And here you have, first of all, it involves a working class family struggling from paycheck to paycheck, just as it was with Roseanne Barr and John Goodman on the original show. And so that in and of itself, it's not like all these shows like Friends and Sex and the City and Girls, where they're all sort of affluent and running around Manhattan. So that, I think, connects with a lot of people who often see people like them on TV. And then they have this brilliant plot device where Roseanne is a big Trump supporter and her sister hates Trump, and they go at it and they have been talking. You know, that does kind of reflect a lot of conversations and arguments in families since Donald Trump's election. And I think it was good as a marketing device because it got a lot of attention on cable news and online, but also as entertainment.
Who do you think's watching it? I mean, do you think it's only going to be popular with supporters of the president?
I don't think so. For one thing, I think Donald Trump's watching him because obviously the president made a congratulatory phone call to Roseanne. And interestingly, when I talked to the president a couple of times, even after he was elected, he's such a creature of television. He would come back to bringing up Arnold Schwarzenegger taking over his old show, The Apprentice, and how he was tanking. I mean, he really follows this stuff. Look, with 18 million people watching, not that it will necessarily stay at that level, I don't think it will only be watched by supporters of Donald Trump. It's not just about Donald Trump. It's about the struggles of the Connor family trying to bring it into 2018. I think some of it was a little forced when you had the surrogate pregnancy and a gender fluid kid, but nevertheless, an attempt to sort of update the show. I think Roseanne still has a lot of fans from the old show, and I also think that this kind of sitcom, if the writing stays good, is different. It just feels and smells different than most things on television, and that could mean it has a loyal audience.
She's also an admitted supporter of the president, said she was thrilled to get a congratulatory phone call from him, and she made note of the fact that he does understand how ratings work and how ratings can point to different things. Do you think these ratings could have implications, for instance, the way the midterms play out or the way candidates do certain things in the midterm elections?
I don't think the popularity of Roseanne, the show, is going to affect the strategy of people running for Congress this year. But I do think maybe it's a little bit of a mirror to our society that, you know, because, you know, you look at any of the Hollywood award shows, it's just all this Trump bashing. So even to have one show where Trump is certainly argued about, but there is the lead character who likes his president. And he said he was going to shake things up, Roseanne said on the show. He promised jobs. They almost lost their house. I mean, this is a family that even 30 years later still has serious financial problems. I think that's reflective of society. And so I think it's touched kind of a nerve simply for that reason.
So just how big were the ratings? With a 5.1, it's the highest rated comedy telecast on any network in 4 years, coming pretty close to two wildly popular cable shows, Game of Thrones and The Walking Dead. Michelle Polino is an entertainment reporter for Fox News Radio.
Let's face it, the world has changed. TV viewing has changed, and that's what makes this show a game changer as well, because it's on a network. The last show that has done this well on a network has been NBC's mega hit, This Is Us. At its peak, it garnered over 12 million, okay? Let me give you another network show that peaked, and it was a reboot as well. Will and Grace premiered with about 10 million viewers and a 3.0 rating, okay? American Idol, another revival, 10 million. So her numbers have doubled what is expected on network television.
Now, the original incarnation of the show was very popular, but do you think people would have envisioned this reboot being quite this successful?
Okay, I did, because I knew what was coming. I had that feeling that this was going to do really, really well. I think that the other people that knew were ABC and Sarah Gilbert, who pushed for this. Now, she plays Darlene. She plays Roseanne's daughter on the series. She's the real driving force behind this reboot. She knew that this country was ready to really honestly talk about politics, and this show is opening the door to do that.
Right, because on the show, Roseanne, as she is in real life, is a Trump supporter, but then she's got her sister on the show, is very much against the president and his policies, and you've got that dynamic playing out in a lot of families around the country.
Absolutely. I think, and that's what's struck a chord so much. I have not seen dialogue like this in the last couple of days on social media than since the election. Like, dialogue initiated from this show. Let me give you a couple of other notes. This premiere, you know, the ratings, they were the highest in Tulsa, Oklahoma. So they were the highest in Trump country. That's where most of her ratings came from, the middle of the country.
But this is in sharp contrast to the treatment that Tim Allen got for playing a supporter of the president on television.
Absolutely. His show was canceled. And he was the only fictional character in a scripted series that was a Trump supporter on television. And they canceled it despite having good ratings. And now there is talk. I'm hearing in certain circles that there is talk of bringing the show back because of the success of Roseanne. That's the echo that's happening in Hollywood.
So Howie Kurtz, does this mean more shows like this coming that are favorable to the president?
Given everything that I know about Hollywood, I would say the answer is no. I don't think we're, you might see a couple, but I think Roseanne is unique in that she wasn't afraid to put this on, also that she seems personally sympathetic to the president. And, you know, if it was some other actress who just thought, hey, it would be really cool to have a show with a main character like Trump, I don't think it would have come off, it wouldn't have sort of registered high enough on the sincerity meter because of who Roseanne is, and she's been something of an outsider in her career, and because of the character she portrays, a family that literally is sitting there trading drug prescriptions because they don't have enough to make it through the end of the month, that does feel like a typical Trump supporter, or some of the working class voters who used to vote Democratic who did cross over and vote for Donald Trump in this election. I don't think we should overinterpret it and say, this means that the media will be swinging in Donald Trump's direction. But to the extent that it provides a little balance, but also it's a comedy, it's got to provide laughs, it's got to keep up the momentum of interesting characters and interesting plots. But it does balance the scales just a little bit.
Howard Kurtz, thanks so much for your time.
Good to talk to you.
Download Perito and Steigerwald. I'll tell you what.
Is it a lot of pressure to cook you dinner?
No, because I ate hot dogs for breakfast on a moving train and loved it.
Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcast.com.
And now, some good news with Tanya J. Powers.
He's an American hero, traveling across the American heartland. His name is Sidney Walton, and he's 99 years old. Sidney is doing that cross-country tour, timing it so it wraps up on his 100th birthday in Washington, D.C., where he hopes to meet with President Trump. His son, Paul, is also on the trip, which has been going on for about 2 weeks so far.
We've already been to the World War II Museum, where we kicked off our tour, Dad. Right? Then we went to Baton Rouge, the capital, went to the governor's office.
They've also been to Houston, Texas, where they featured Sidney on the Jumbotron at the rodeo. He was also given a commemorative coin by former president and fellow World War II veteran George H.W. Bush. They're calling it the No Regrets Tour.
All my dad's life, he's talked about, remember your one regret in life when you were growing up in New York City. You had a chance when you were about 20 years old to do what, Dad? Do you remember? To meet the Civil War veterans.
Civil War veterans.
And you never took advantage of that opportunity.
That's right.
And you've regretted that ever since.
Ever since.
And to make up for that one regret that you've carried all your life, we decided if you live to 99 years old, we would go on tour, which we just started a week and a half ago, and go to all 50 states, all the big cities, the capitals, meet all the governors, and then roll right into the White House on your 100th birthday.
Oh, boy.
Paul says his dad gets asked a lot what his secret to longevity is.
It's to live a purposeful life. And boy, do we have a purpose now, because to make up for Dad's one regret, he's going to go around and meet everyone out there that actually wants to meet a World War II veteran and never had the opportunity to. And my dad's willing to meet and greet and take photos with anyone who's never met a World War II veteran. Right, Dad?
Right.
He says people come out to see his dad, and that support has been overwhelming.
Finally, you're going to get the respect that you deserve, Dad.
Oh, fine.
You helped save the world. You saved America. And we're so happy about it. And thank you.
You can track his journey at the website GoSidneyGo.com. And from all of us at Fox, thank you for your service, sir. Tanya J. Powers, Fox News.
Download Lauren Green's Lighthouse Faith.
We sort of think that God has nothing to say about our pain and suffering. God has nothing to say about our sex life. And the truth is that God is very much has spoken to all of these things.
Subscribe now at foxnewspodcast.com.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Shannon Bream.
What's on your mind?
A little boy I'll never get to meet has made me believe in miracles. Weeks ago, I sat next to Emilio's Uncle Tim on a flight from Miami to D.C. We chatted a bit, exchanged business cards, and later swapped restaurant recommendations. Well, Sunday, I got an urgent email from Tim telling me that 11-year-old Emilio was dying and had one wish: to get a message from one of the Avengers. Now, I got to admit, I'm no superhero expert. I don't know lots of folks in Hollywood, and so I wasn't sure I could actually do much. Earlier that day, though, as I sat in church, my pastor talked about praying for things so big only God could get the credit, things beyond our human abilities and resources. I thought of that as I said a prayer and sent out the tweet asking for anyone who was an Avenger, knew an Avenger, had any contacts to help. Otherwise, I asked if they'd retweet. Well, the first good lead came from Jake Tapper over at CNN. He's friends with Paul Rudd, known as Ant-Man. He sent the first series of videos to Emilio. Then Chris Evans, Captain America, stepped up. By the end of Sunday, we had more than 10,000 retweets and a number of celebrities starting to reach out. I got the videos to Emilio's uncle as quickly as I could, or told the actors how they could connect with him directly. On Monday, Paul Bettany sent a video. Then Benedict Wong, Don Cheadle, and Zachary Levi, one after another, they started to roll in as connections paid off and the retweets topped 35,000. It was truly a group effort. Chloe Bennett, Clark Gregg, Elizabeth Olsen, and so many others offered to help. On Wednesday afternoon, Mark Ruffalo, the Hulk, was set to call Emilio in his hospital room. His twin little brothers had been along for the ride and were thrilled. Sadly, Mark never got to make that call. Emilio has fought cancer more than once, and this time would be his last. He's passed away, but what an impact his young life has had. He brought together tens of thousands of total strangers in a quest to do one thing, make a dream come true for a little boy they would never meet. Emilio proved that social media can be an enormous force for good, that there is plenty of kindness in the world, and that strangers can be moved by compassion. Emilio's family started a foundation to help others facing the same struggles and challenges that they have. Emilio also wrote a book last year, and all the proceeds will help fund the foundation. So if you want to help, just go to jeansfoundation.com. That's G-E-N-E-S foundation.com. And please remember that across political, class, race, and all the other lines that are supposedly drawn out there, we can all learn a lot from an 11-year-old with a very big dream. I'm Shannon Bream.
You have been listening to the Fox News Rundown. Stay up to date by subscribing to Fox News Radio's hourly newscast at foxnewspodcasts.com. And for up-to-the-minute news, visit foxnews.com.